Hello, hello, hello. Hello, Georgians, hello, global citizens, and hello, concerned Americans. My name is Varun Kadathala, and I'm the current co-host of the Politician Podcast, which myself and my high school best friend Damian Galvin created in June of this year to talk about issues that interest us, issues that disgust us, and issues that America needs to know about. In other words, myself and Damian created this podcast to deconstruct public policy issues of the past and the present and create a more equitable future for all of us. We have a very, very special episode queued up for you guys, but before we play this episode, we're going to give a special thank you to our sponsor, Patreon, and our wonderful team here at Politician, which includes high school juniors Jada Pilling, Yi Shen, and Julia Hartman. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode, and we hope that you enjoy. See you in the episode.
And we're rolling. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of Politician. My name is Damian Galvin, and as always, I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Varun.
Hey, guys. My name is Varun Kadathala. I'm the co-host of the Politician Podcast, which myself and my best friend in high school, Damian Galvin, host to raise political conversation about issues and deconstruct the past to create a more beneficial, a more equitable future for everybody, regardless of their race, their creed, their origin, and their sexuality. So now we have a very, very special episode today. We have our Republican correspondent, conservative correspondent, Will Carroll, here today to talk to us about the RNC, the Republican National Convention. So before we begin, Will, I want to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself for all of our guests here today on your background and who you are.
All right, awesome, guys. As some of y'all know, if you've been watching the show for a little bit, I am Will Carroll. I am the Republican correspondent for Politician Podcast. And watch the other podcasts. Watch them.
Perfect.
Yeah, because I do, I feel like my intro gets shorter.
Every time, right? Every time you come on, it's just like you got less to talk about yourself. Yeah. But no, Will is actually our only ever reoccurring guest, if I'm not mistaken. And he's been on, this is going to be his third time on the podcast itself. Yeah. We haven't kicked Will out. I'm very excited for this episode. This is definitely going to be one that drives a lot of conversation. There's a lot of interesting stuff. And I feel like your take is going to be different than a lot of people might expect from a Republican correspondent or a conservative correspondent for that matter. I switched up the intro a little bit too. I went with my wonderful co-host, giving Varun some extra credit. I'm excited to be here with everyone filming another episode, our first RNC special. We're going to try to do this. We brought Will on because we want to, it's people I think perceive us as more of a liberal podcast just because of the nature of the fact that we don't like the president because the president doesn't do presidential things. But we'll discuss that later.
To be fair,
in the RNC.
Go ahead. I don't really like the president.
Oh, wow. All right. That's a shift, but we'll talk about that later.
Welcome to the liberal podcast. Today, we're going to be bashing the RNC for about an hour.
I wouldn't go that far.
I think there's points to take home, good and bad. We'll talk about those all
definitely,
today.
Definitely.
And as we begin here, I want to kind of talk about the theme of the RNC. Now, we had days one and day two happen Monday and Tuesday this week. So I want to talk about the theme in our opinions. I think in my opinion, the theme was just more of glorifying the president. I think a lot of it was glorifying the president, but also economic recovery. Because they were talking in day two a lot about small businesses, these middle-class people, and I think it was pretty memorable. I think the second day was actually a big, big improvement from the first day, in my opinion. I think they shifted the rhetoric from glorifying the president towards more of just making sure middle-class people know that their small businesses are going to be supported by this president as the future comes. I don't know if that's realistic, if that's articulate, but I think that's what their messaging was on the second day, especially. What do y'all think about that?
Go for it, Will. I'll let you go. I'll let you give your take first.
I agree with Vern. Second day, in my opinion, was a lot better. I think that the first day was more about, there was a lot of anti-Biden, anti-Democrat sentiment, which I'm not a Biden fan, but I don't think that you should start out your first day immediately bashing the Democrats because you had a Democrat on the first day. You had Vernon Jones, the Democrat state representative from Georgia. Like,
it was funny. That was a weird thing. That was a weird part.
I mean, yeah, he did, but we'll talk about that later. He kind of backed the Democratic Party, but
it didn't make sense because he's a Democrat. But go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I think that I think the first day was more about uniting Republicans and less about uniting Americans. And that's what we really need to do right now. And I think that the only two people, I think my three favorite speakers were on the first day. Nikki Haley, Vernon Jones, and Tim Scott were all on the first day. And I think that they did a phenomenal job, but there were parts I didn't like about the first day. I honestly couldn't sit through it. I couldn't sit through the whole thing. I sat through about an hour of ABC covering it, and then today I just watched like C-SPAN all day to get up to speed on it. So my notes are all out of order.
I don't even blame you though. Fox News couldn't even sit all the way through it. They were like, "Yeah, no, well, we got to compensate over this.
I sure as hell wasn't gonna watch the Fox News. I wanted to find a somewhat unbiased, and I say that as I was watching ABC, but I was trying to find, like, you know, I tuned into MSNBC, and I just hear like, they're not even talking about someone talking. Like, this is like halfway through the convention. They're not even talking about talking. They're just straight out bashing the president. And I'm like, all right, I just couldn't watch it because they weren't talking about what I needed them to hear. And then,
well, interestingly enough,
doing it, but I mean, they weren't really, it was weird because they wouldn't really comment on things in order. They would kind of go like, I want to pull, like, there was a nurse that spoke on the first day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they didn't even talk about anything about how she was like, anything about what she talked about. They were just like, oh, Trump brought in producers from The Apprentice for the RNC because he wants a show. Like, okay, but I want your commentary about what literally just happened. So I hope that today we can kind of like focus on, like, I don't know how we're going to structure this today. I assume we just kind of go through speakers and what they talked about.
Yeah, kind of. Well, the thing is, I want to start by saying my prediction on the DNC episode, on the final DNC episode that we did, the part two, about what the first day of the RNC or what the RNC was going to look like was completely right. I had hoped for the fact that Trump was going to try to unify, but I predicted the fact that he was going to be so butthurt about the DNC that he was just going to spend the first day bashing it, which happened. I thought that he was gonna maybe, I'm gonna tell you this, his advisors 1000% told him not to say one word about Michelle Obama. 1000%. I don't know if he did. I didn't catch him saying anything about Michelle Obama. Can anyone attest to him saying something?
No, I didn't hear him.
I didn't hear him say anything about Michelle. No.
His advisors 1000% told him, boy, you keep that name out your mouth if you want to get any votes from a black woman.
But does he listen to his advisors? That's the question, Damien.
The thing is,
does he listen to his advisors?
I think he's in desperation mode. I'm not even gonna lie. But that's beyond the point. I think I agree with you, Will, about the fact that a lot of news sources were kind of just, I think, bashing the president and kind of being all over the place. But then again, it felt like the first night of the RNC was a little bit all over the place. It felt like there wasn't no like consistency or no consistent message. I would say, you said that the consistent message was unifying Republicans, not Americans. I call that dividing Americans, right? If you're just trying to unify one political front, you're dividing Americans. So I think that was the first night, divisiveness. So it made for an interesting night, and it's making for even more so than an interesting night, an interesting political strategy moving forward, because it looks like he's not trying to win votes. He's trying to secure them.
Yeah, you're right. If I may interlude, I think that a lot of Republicans were talking about the DNC days one and day two as being completely, completely counterproductive, you know, bashing Trump and not focusing upon real hard policy. I think that was accurate. You know, Biden was the only speaker who really presented real hard policy. And even that wasn't enough, in my opinion. But them talking so much about it, I thought, was validated. On the first day of the RNC, though, I think that they completely reversed their claims, because the whole first day was completely the exact same thing. There was no real hard policy on the first day, even the second day for that matter. It was mainly bashing, Vice President Biden, bashing his platform, bashing the kind of person that he is. You saw more so of that the first day than the second day. But I think that the idea is that Republicans kept bashing Democrats for something that they went on to do. So I think that it goes to show a lot about the Republicans, and more so the main issue that I saw in the whole RNC and the party's platform was that they had no platform. If you look at it, the Republican National platform was literally one page of 50 bullet points from President Trump. That's the Trump platform. The Democratic platform was 92 pages, but the ironic thing is the Democrats never brought up their platform. That was 92 pages of stuff they didn't bring up, and the Republicans had one page. But that, we have to consider, is unprecedented. We've never seen either party present no platform before, and I think it goes back to the point of Trump is not playing on a platform. He's playing on people. He's playing on people's sentiments, emotions, and maybe even their hate of Biden, the hate of Democrats. You saw so much hatred towards Democrats the first day, I think even more than hatred of Republicans during the DNC. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's hatred both ways, but I think that today, and especially during day two, I want to mention this specifically. There was a black man, I forget his name, but he came out and he talked about how Joe Biden wants to put us back in chains. Joe Biden wants to restrict our political thought based upon a series of statements that were used in the wrong ways. And that's my opinion on it. I think that we can have our own opinions on this, but I think that person was simply trying to divide us even more, because Joe Biden does not want to put black people back in the chains. Yes, you can say what you want about him and black people, his record, but he does not want to put black people back in the chains. And that's the reality of it. So I think that we should consider it as it is, mention real hard policy, and not just divide people, divide the American people, because who are we trying to attract during this convention? Independents in the second day, the third day, the fourth day. Yes, unite the party, but also attract these independents, because half the voters already have their minds made up. So attracting independents is not down to just bashing on Biden. It's also going to be down for these Republicans for presenting real hard policy, which I don't think they have.
Any statements on that, Will? Well, before I think even we proceed with that, I think that what I want to say is I want to ask this specifically to Will, because we're talking about the lack of policy and stuff. And we're talking about the hatred that's being swayed on Biden. Will, I believe, and I've strongly said this a bunch of times, that Trump won not because he was liked more in 2016, but because Hillary was hated more. But I don't think that as many Americans really have an issue with Biden as they did with Hillary. Would you agree to that point? Do you think that him playing on hatred is even going to make a dent in him? Because, I mean, this is a man with such a solid reputation, you know, like, an incredibly solid reputation. Say what you want to say about it. At the end of the day, there's only a couple gaffes in his reputation. And I think that the 22-minute speech that he gave closed one of those gaffes, which was, you know, the fact that he's mentally incompetent.
Well, that was quite a bit to try and answer, so I'll try and confine it a little bit. I think that the biggest reason that people are going to pick Donald Trump this November is that I think more than the gaffes, more than the "you ain't black" or "poor kids are just as smart as white kids" or whatever you said about roaches or something, or "you can't go into 7-Eleven with an Indian accent." And there's not a couple of them. There's a lot of them. And his mental capacity won't even be the reason that he doesn't get elected. Like, that is just a.
Do you think there's a possibility he won't get elected?
Well, you know, I think everyone was saying, I think I don't want to jump to conclusions, because Democrats did.
We can't.
And even I did, as a Republican in 2016, when Donald Trump was elected, I woke up, I was shocked. I didn't even feel happy at the time. I was in awe. I went to school in awe, because I just didn't believe it.
Yeah.
But here's what's going to win Trump this election. And it's the argument that Joe Biden has been a politician. He's been in Washington for 47 years. 47. Donald Trump has, to some people, I don't know necessarily how true this is, but Donald Trump has done more in almost 4 years than he has in 47. And it doesn't matter that Donald Trump is president and that Joe Biden is, you know, has been a senator. But when you put someone in office who says that they're about to make all these radical changes, and Biden, it hasn't really been that, but Biden, I'm going to quote probably my least favorite speaker from the first night, Representative Matt Gaetz from Florida. He said, "The woketopians will settle for Biden because they will make him an extra in a movie written, produced, and directed by others." He is not going to do anything. Bernie Sanders, AOC, he's going to be their puppet. Their hands are going to be so far up his rear end that they are going to be controlling his every move. So he's really just the face. He is just the face of it. Now, also, Matt Gaetz also talked about how the hashtag settle for Biden is trending on Twitter. First off, I don't think that as an American, you should ever settle. I don't think you should ever settle. It doesn't matter if your only two options are old white guy number one or old white guy number two. I don't think you should ever settle. Yep. But I think that the fact that all these people are settling for Biden, who is a moderate, who if he acted like, and I'm not talking about the 22 minute speech because I watched some of it. It was pretty good. But I'm not talking about that 22 minute speech. I'm talking about how when, and I'm going to go back to the mental capacity argument, that it's not the main reason he's not going to get elected, but it's a big reason that a lot of people aren't going to vote for him, is that I would have voted for Biden in 2008. I would have, because he had more of it in him. Not this year. He's, and I say this as, you know, again, we got two old white dudes.
Yeah.
He's not in the right state of mind. And if he was 12 years younger, hell yeah, I'd vote for him. Hell yeah, I'd probably pick him over Trump.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's like, interesting.
I want to let you respond, Damien, before I.
Go ahead.
I just want to say, you know, you mentioned the 47 years in politics. I can name a couple instances where Joe Biden has said things that can be perceived as insensitive. He's been having gaffes his whole life, definitely. But his you can, but again, he has been having gaffes his whole life. But then again, you also have to consider that most of his life has been spent on the national stage. Whereas this president has, as Will said, only spent about the last 6 years, including his first presidential run, right? On the national stage. And within those 6 years, I think I can name more gaffes.
Yeah,
then Biden has, right? You can start dishonoring a Gold Star family, good people on both sides, you know, calling them thugs. And then yesterday, I think, or 2 days ago, he called for the National Guard, and didn't give his condolences. It is what it is. I mean, I can just keep going on and on and on, right? With like gaffes that the president has had. And yes, he has done more, but he's also been in a position to do more. As a senator, you have to have at least another 50 people agree with you in most circumstances in order to be to do something, right? That's at least another 50, or you have to have 49 people agree with you and then have the vice president agree with you.
Take into account just what he's voted for. Like, Trump has actually been the first president since Reagan to not start a war. And Biden voted for wars in Iraq, Libya, Serbia.
Let's be clear here. Trump also wanted the Iraq war, but never mentions it. That's a fact.
The thing is,
just so we can make that clear.
The thing is, I get that Biden voted for these wars, but these wars also happened because the majority of politicians voted for them. That's what I'm saying, right? It can't just be like Biden did it single-handedly. For example, the war on drugs, you have to say that Ronald Reagan single-handedly did the war on drugs, right? Because that was Ronald Reagan's policy. Whereas there wasn't really senators focusing on it. But either way, that's beyond the point. What I'm trying to say here is I think that You know, one thing that I think of, right? And this is just something that I want to say, and this is something that has been bothering me all day ever since Varun mentioned it to me over text. The pardon of Susan B. Anthony, right? And this is, I'm going somewhere here with a gaffe.
Yeah.
So just give me a second for this to develop, and the gaffe will make 1,000% sense. The pardoning of Susan B. Anthony. First of all, Susan B. Anthony never did anything wrong in her opinion, and thus never wanted to be pardoned, and didn't believe that she should have been arrested in the first place, or should have been. I think she might have not even been arrested. Maybe she was fined. I don't know the specifics around the situation, but she believed that she did nothing to ever attribute to her being pardoned in the first place, right? So that's one thing. And this is where the gaffe is, right? The Central Park Five. Five boys between the ages of 14 and 16 falsely accused and charged with the brutal rape of a woman in Central Park. Donald Trump pulled ads in a newspaper calling for the death penalty to be brought back on a 14-year-old boy that later evidence showed that none of the five boys committed it, and another man who, if had he simply been asked, did you commit the crime, would have pleaded guilty to it because he pleaded guilty to two other rapes, committed that crime, right? So again, five boys between the ages of 14 and 16, Donald Trump pulls ads in New York City calling for the death penalty to be back, then says yesterday, why did it take so long for Susan B. Anthony to be pardoned? Donald Trump, I asked the president of the United States, why has it been about 30 years since that happened? And you have yet to say, on the contrary, he says that those boys are still guilty. He still claims that after DNA evidence, after someone pleads guilty and admits that they did the crime, that five boys should still be dead right now. And let me also say, they're five boys of color. Right? Five African-American boys. So if you want to talk about a big mental gaffe and you want to say, oh, Joe Biden did this, Joe Biden did that, I want to hear the president pardon, and more than pardon, but ask for the forgiveness and you know, ask for forgiveness from the to the mothers of these children, right? A 14-year-old boy, imagine calling for a 14-year-old boy to be put on the death penalty.
I want to mention something before we continue here. We talk about Joe Biden and gaffes and how he's been saying a bunch of insensitive things over his 47-year kind of career in politics. Now, the difference between Trump and Joe Biden, I believe, Damian Will, is that Trump doesn't apologize for his gaffes. Mm. You can say what you want about Joe Biden, but Joe Biden comes out and says, I made a mistake. And say if it's genuine or ungenuine. The thing is, both of them are political figures. They're figures in the public eye. And apologizing does show a lot to your supporters. And Trump, basically, every single thing he's done, which is a gaffe or is insensitive, he supports it fervently. Keeps supporting it with his own feedback, critique, just his own opinion. And Joe Biden always comes out and says, you know what? I made a mistake, and I regret it. It was something I said, sleight of mind, and he knows he makes gaffes. He knows he's the kind of guy to create gaffes. Now, I think I want to mention a couple of things here. When talking about Iraq, the war, Trump supported this war, even though he said he didn't support the war. This is a fact, because Howard Stern asked Trump in 2002 if he supported the war, and he said, yeah, I guess so. Then after Bush formally announced the war in Iraq had started, Trump said the war was an increasing success for the nation. He has a history of supporting this Iraq war, and the Republicans are out here saying he didn't support it. And it's proven, they've been saying it, but that's the facts of the matter. And we also have to mention that the Republicans are saying that Trump doesn't want to defund the police and Biden doesn't want to defund the police, when the fact of the matter is that Biden wants to put more money into the police. So a lot of these untrue, unclear, and falsified claims are being put out. But I think that's not the biggest issue with this convention. You're talking about Biden being a puppet. In a sense, he's also listening to the claims of AOC, of Bernie, as you say. But when you're talking about being a puppet, we have to also mention Trump as a puppet to Russia, to foreign nations. Because I think that's very, very, very important to mention with the Mueller investigation, with the current climate between China, between Russia. China wants Trump to win. Russia wants Trump to win, clearly. Interference in the election. So we have to also mention that. And as a last point, I think when you're talking about settling for Trump or settling for Biden, I think people are saying settle for Biden. Yes, that's a point people are making. But the whole Republican, you know, party's platform for days one and day two has been settle for Trump. As I said before, they have one page of policy. I don't know if you guys have read this.
Just quote this, Varun. What do you have to lose? He literally has said it himself. Just settle for me. What do you have to lose?
He says, what do you have to lose? And I'm going to end on this. His one page platform includes everything he's done in the past year. And I think the only major difference is the Space Force. He has a Space Force coming out. And his main policy is return to normal in 2021. Return to normal. And if you look at the RNC, the days one and day two, you look at how they're phrasing the America under Trump. The America under Trump is an America that's worse than it was in 2016. They're saying make America great again. Well, we've had 4 years. America should be great. We should be keeping America great. But right now, America's hurting. They're giving issues of California, giving issues of states under the jurisdiction of our nation who are struggling, suffering, and how we can fix this suffering. We've had 4 years to fix this suffering, Mr. President. We have to look at what you've done, your track record. They're phrasing it like they did in 2016, which is different now because who has been running the country for the past 4 years? Not Barack Obama, not Joe Biden. It's President Trump and Mike Pence.
I think that I think you make a lot of good points there. I think that was look, we're not in, you know, we're not in the same America as we were last year. And, you know, pre-COVID, we were doing great. We were doing we had 7 million new jobs, and 2/3 of those went to minorities and women. And the economy was great. African-American unemployment and just minority unemployment was at its low. But I don't think that, in the sense of what's best for the country, I don't think we need an administration change right now. Because you've got someone who's been handling it, and say what you will about how they've been handling it, but they've been handling it. And they're trying to, you know, President Trump has been praised by the governor in New York and the governor of California just countless times about, you know, how on the spot they've been. And those guys are both Democrats. So, you know, that could go.
But that was in the beginning of the virus. That was not right now. That was in the very beginning before we had cases come up. Those were very misplaced. But go ahead.
Obviously, you know, there's still a lot of work to do in the sense of reopening and things like that. But I don't think that gathering in the streets is really helping anything either, whether that be whether that be a Black Lives Matter movement or whether that be a pro-Trump rally, which I haven't really seen as much of those recently. But I think that the overall message is that Trump's in charge now, and I feel like he is the only one who will know what he's doing, because he has been in politics less than Joe Biden, and he already has more experience than him. He already does. So
experience,
you know, I know that we haven't being president.
Well, yeah, because Joe Biden's never been president.
Exactly. He's been a heartbeat away from the presidency, but he hasn't had that experience that it's like I'm going to use a very loose
analogy.
Comparison. An analogy. Thank you. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
So you've got, you know, there's NASCAR race, you know, and then there's a professional race driver. And halfway through the race, he just switches out with a guy who's never driven a car before and says, all right, your turn. I feel like that is what's going to happen in the case of the coronavirus pandemic between the administration change should Biden become president. And I don't want to say, I know I've kind of said like when Joe Biden becomes or when Trump gets reelected or whatnot. I don't want to say that yet, because I think regardless, I'm not going to care, because if Trump gets reelected, I want to see him lead the country out of the pandemic and reshape the Republican Party. And if Biden gets reelected, I want him and his administration and the people that he surrounds himself to, again, lead us out of the pandemic. But also, I want him to, like, should Joe Biden get elected president, I don't think he should give in to, you know, AOC, Bernie, and what I refer to as the alternative left or the alt left. And because as a moderate politician, I like Joe Biden. I do. I think that he was a pretty good choice by Obama for VP. And I think there's a reason that he's been in politics for 47 years is that people of all, like all types of people like him. Mm-hmm. But I think we're going to have a lot to look forward to this November and election coverage. And I'm really excited for the debates. And I'm just, I'm eager to see what happens next. So, and I know we haven't really been talking about the convention. We've kind of been talking about like policy and,
And we'll switch over to that. Stuff.
So let's try and switch back over to the convention. I know it might sound like I'm not.
No, you're good. No. I mean, 1,000%. I think either way, on the basis we're talking about in a sense, we're still talking about both conventions because, again, this is what the conventions are about. They're about showing the policy and such. But I think Varun wanted to make a point.
Yeah. Before we continue, and we're running to our 30-minute mark here, and I want to mention one thing. First of all, to address your point, I believe that Biden has the experience for one very specific reason. Because Biden and Obama, during their 8-year presidency and vice presidency, controlled the H1N1 virus, the first global pandemic in 40 years. They controlled that virus. We closed down schools in the spring for that virus, but we controlled the virus and we got past it. You know, 2016, we had no virus going on. Obviously, it was a very different landscape, but 2009 was when this virus was controlled. And I think that because of that, Biden has a trove of experience that he can use towards this virus. Now, Trump also has the experience in people like Fauci, his doctors. But the problem is that he hasn't listened to his doctors, listened to their advice, and he's been pushing right now for the CDC to diminish testing, stop testing people unless they have actual symptoms, which is terrible in a virus of this capacity. But point aside, I want to mention one thing that I think was the highlight of day one of the convention. And that was the little kid, the teenager, who had a Trump hat on and was just simply grinning in front of a bunch of counter-protesters. And they were berating him on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. They had people from across the nation, commentators, media commentators, people, liberals, basically bashing him for keeping a grin on his face when he didn't know what was happening. And that was one of the most pressing points because even as a Democrat, I understood his point. Because if you're a Trump supporter in today's America, you are looked down upon. And I won't say whether it's good for a good reason or not, but the fact of the matter is that just because you wear that hat, just because you wear that emblem of what you support, you're put down.
Yeah,
and I think that was
be.
A very valid point. You shouldn't be, because I think that no matter what you support, the fact that you mention it or support it in any capacity and are involved in the political process, you should get a glimpse of respect for that. Now, Damien, I want to get your thoughts on this before we continue with this conversation on his overall rhetoric and what he said and how that really affects his RNC and how you feel about that.
Yeah, definitely. So just, right before we cut to the commercial break, just kind of, I want to thank Will. Man, this has been a really insightful conversation. I think that we're talking about a lot of good stuff here. And, you know, again, to all our listeners, be sure to tune in this Friday as well. Again, once we cut to this commercial break, we'll be back with our 30-minute segment after that. But no, on that topic, I think that it kind of goes back to the divisiveness. And I think that it was very strategic what he was doing. And I say that because he's trying to unite people to feel discriminated against, right? He's trying to bring that divisiveness, kind of how Will said that he's trying to unify Trump supporters. And he's trying to make Trump supporters feel like they're looked down upon. And in that sense, he's unifying them. And I think that he's doing a good job. And I think that both parties are doing a good job conveying their message, with which message I agree with and which strategy I like more. We can discuss that right after a quick commercial break and a message from our sponsors. Be sure to stay tuned. And after a 6-hour commercial break for us, we're back. We're back to discuss the RNC. I think that we wanted to start right away, right off the basis. Basically, we kind of dissuade a little bit on the focus of the RNC. So I think that we kind of wanted to touch some of the main speakers. I know there were some speakers that you wanted to bring up, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah, of course. My favorite speakers of the night and my least favorite speakers of the night. But I think for the most part, we had a lot of pretty good speakers in our first and second night of the RNC. Do you want to start with maybe, I don't know, it's obviously, it's not my show, but do you maybe want to start with maybe I could bring, as a Republican, I could bring maybe some of my least favorite speakers.
Yeah, I think we can start with that.
Okay. I love that. Yeah. All right, cool. So we'll start, and I've kind of already told you this, but my least favorite speaker of the night, or of both nights, was Representative Matt Gaetz. And it's not because he looks like Jimmy Neutron. It's pretty much because he's just divisive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just from what I got from him, he's like he had good points. I quoted him earlier in the podcast. I said the Woketopians will settle for Biden because they will make him an extra in a movie written, produced, and directed by others. That and him saying that Trump is the first president since Reagan to not start a new war. We briefly talked about that, but that was probably the only good points he made. He pretty much just bashed. We were talking about this earlier, but not. We were pretty much just bashed Democrats, and he, like, that's not. You're not supposed to do that. In my opinion, I don't think you should do that at an RNC convention or a DNC convention. Like on the inverse side,
I don't think that you should do it when you're the defending, when you're like the president. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, I think the president should say, "I've done this for the past 4 years," while the Democratic nominee should say, or the opposing nominee should say, "He hasn't." Like, one side should always attack. We talked about this on the DNC, but go ahead.
Oh yeah, I think the Democrats. I almost commented on the DNC thing, which isn't what we're talking about, but. I feel like they were playing quite a bit of offense, which, you know, sometimes like a lot of offense. I was watching some ABC coverage on the first night before I switched to C-SPAN for the second night. But
yeah,
ABC coverage was saying how they were interviewing people who were like producers and stuff. And they all pretty much said Trump was going to go 80% offense, 20% defense. And I think that's really shown, especially when you have such a strong speaker in Matt Gaetz, who honestly isn't very, like, I don't look at Matt Gaetz and I don't think anyone who isn't like a white straight male will look at Matt Gaetz and be like, I really resonate with this guy. Like, he looks like the word, like, conservative Republican alt-right, like, and he that's why, like, you know, I feel like in the next 12 years we'll see him trying to run for president. I think he'll be the same thing that we've seen with you know, Andrew Yang or Amy Klobuchar on the Democrat side, where they just end up dropping out pretty quick, or on the Republican side, he'd be more like a Ben Carson or a
any Bush after George.
Or
any Bush, like, after George W. Bush.
Yeah, or like Rand Paul, but Rand Paul, he spoke. I liked him. But he was probably my least favorite of the night. And I took the most notes on him as my least favorite. That was just because I heard him. I just heard his opening line. His opening line was, "Good evening, something, something. I'm speaking to you from an auditorium emptier than Joe Biden's schedule."
Yeah.
Right, like, that as well. The thing is, like, that's something that should be like on Comedy Central, like on the roast.
I don't think it was funny. I thought it was like, oh, he doesn't have a schedule because he's been.
Oh, quirky. He's quirky.
I think if he really wanted to make a point, he should have said something about Biden's cognitive ability. But
that's what they should have ran on. They should have ran on the fact that the man, if they want. OK, listen. Well, I want to gauge your perspective on this. Right. Whatever. Jesus Christ. I sound like Donald Duck there. But whatever you can say about Donald Trump, you can say that a main reason that he won, despite whatever, like, sure, he won fair and square, he won, right? He lost the popular vote, he won the Electoral College, that's what matters, he won the election, he's the president. But the main reason that I feel that he won is because, you know, I say this with almost respect, he ran on hatred and he did it well, right? And he was good at bashing Hillary Clinton. He was really good at bashing her. Lock her up. She's a criminal. Benghazi, Benghazi, Benghazi. You know that thing, Benghazi? Yeah, that was Hillary Clinton.
I see where you're going with this.
They should just bash Joe Biden on it. That's how they're going to win.
I'll relate this to another great, probably, I would argue, this person is probably history's most influential and well-liked character before he started doing bad things. For, and you might know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about Adolf Hitler.
Yeah.
Adolf Hitler was a phenomenal speaker. And I didn't believe that until, and this is when I start, like, this is when they start putting me on the list, but until I started watching some of Adolf Hitler's speeches.
Until I started, like, watching, really idolizing Adolf Hitler, I really didn't understand.
Until I read Mein Kampf. But no, I get you. I get you. Go ahead.
I started watching his speeches, and I was like, this dude, like, I don't understand whatever the hell he's saying, but, like, I can understand, like, what he's trying to get at. Mm-hmm. And then I rewatched the 2016 debates, and Hillary Clinton was like, America, we need a leader. And then Donald Trump was just Donald Trump. He was Donald Trump. He made sense. Yeah. Like, I didn't feel like I was like forced to watch it. Like with Hillary, I was, I kind of just watched Hillary and I was just like, yep. Yeah. Like you could, she's a robot. She's a robot. And like, people were typing things out, and like you could just see what she said. And I think that that's the issue with what's happening with the Democratic Party right now, is that how they're not playing enough offense. And that's, I think that's why Hillary lost. If Hillary would have been like, oh, he said grab him by the whatever, if he made fun of a disabled reporter, or he did this, he did that, he made fun, he did failed college or something like that, or like, something about that. Like, if he would have, if they would have attacked him, like, and was it you guys that we were talking about? I can't remember because it was like 6 hours, but we were talking about when they go low, you go high. Was I talking about that with you?
I don't know for sure.
Were we talking?
I think you mentioned it, Will. You mentioned it. Go ahead.
I might have talked about, I could have been talking about that with my dad the other day.
But I think you mentioned something around that. Go ahead.
So, you know, the Democrats, like Michelle Obama, or no, Hillary Clinton had said, when they go low, we go high. No, when the Republicans go low and they're like Benghazi, 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 you have to go even lower and be like, grab them by the, grab them by the. Like, you have, because you have to,
well,
like, that
politics. Well, can I explain this perspective? Go ahead, Varun. I was just going to say something really quick. Just one thing. The thing is that Hillary had to go. She couldn't, there was no high road for her to take, if you get what I'm saying. Like, it. No one liked her. Like, I'm sorry. It was between two bads. No, whereas in this case, like, Joe Biden can most definitely, he has two routes that he can play. He can either snoop down to Donald Trump's level, or he can try to take a high road. But when Hillary tried to take a high road, it came off as false. It came off as forced almost. Whereas, like, Joe Biden can take the high road, or he can just troll Trump.
Well, yeah, that's important to think about. What I wanted to mention something before about how Hillary didn't attack Trump on the offensive enough. And first of all, it's because that kind of policy didn't work out in terms of her being an empathetic candidate. She wasn't. She really wasn't. She wasn't the kind of candidate who promoted empathy. She was obviously tagged into these Benghazi email incidents, which wasn't fitting of a Democratic or presidential candidate for the seat. But I think that it also falls back on Democrats, specifically not taking him seriously enough. There were so many things that they could have pushed President Trump on in 2016 that could have swayed the election phenomenally. It really could have. And the point of the matter is that this wasn't Hillary pushing President Trump. It was the media outlets. It was CNN. It was MSNBC. So I think if Hillary mentioned these kinds of things, she would have had a better shot. And I want to go back on something that I thought about in 2016. It was Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, say what you want about the DNC rigging the elections, but Bernie Sanders had orchestrated his own downfall, because Bernie Sanders never mentioned Benghazi. That was his biggest flaw as a Democratic candidate. He never mentioned Benghazi. And that's an eternally flawed kind of argument, because if he had mentioned Benghazi, as Trump had, and mentioned how Hillary was a flawed candidate, he would have won the popular vote in the Democratic Party, the Democratic primary, I believe. But his eternal flaw was not mentioning that. I think Hillary's eternal flaw was not hitting Trump enough on what he had, and letting the media cover that. She thought he was going to be self-destructive, which in a sense he was, but she was also in the same route, self-destructive with her own personal health and things like that. But going back on to Matt Gaetz, my perspective on Matt Gaetz is that Matt Gaetz has built his entire political campaign on President Trump. He's built his whole political campaign on who Trump is and Trump's re-election. He even mentioned, as you said, I thought he had ambitions for a higher career in the House and in the kind of election in the executive branch. He doesn't. What he mentioned during the speech was that his only ambition was to reelect President Trump in 2020. That's his only ambition. So he's not looking for a higher seat. I think that Matt Gaetz
can we bid on cap? Can we bid like? Can we say? Will, do you feel like still in 2 years he's gonna go take a higher seat?
Oh, absolutely not.
I think if Trump gets reelected, I think Gaetz is going to be the first one on his knees. Like he's going to.
So he's gonna be the first one to get fired again.
No, I think he's gonna be the first one on the top of the list. Like, what? Yeah. I don't know much about Matt Gaetz.
I had a question. Like, though. Yeah, go ahead.
Trump surrounds himself with people who agree with him, who think like him.
Yes,
so I agree with Will. I think that if he gets reelected, he's going to put Matt Gaetz at the top of his agenda, political agenda, because Matt Gaetz agrees with him and has the same policies as him. And to be frank with you, Matt Gaetz didn't provide much information. Yes, he did inform with everything else Republicans were saying on the first day, but he provided really no information about what Trump is going to do. My biggest issue with Matt Gaetz is that Matt Gaetz is a understated, dramatic player. He's an actor. He really is. Because the first time I heard of Matt Gaetz was him wearing a gas mask to, I think, a House hearing on the coronavirus to downplay the concerns with the virus and say Dems were blowing out of proportion. He wore a gas mask. So he's a guy who's dramatic. He has dramatic entrances. He has theatrical performances. And that's exactly what that was the first day. I think it was a theatrical performance. And as you said, Damian, jokes sometimes aren't put in the right places. And I think having Matt Gaetz there with a theatrical performance, which we did not need, the Republicans did not need on the first day of the RNC.
I have a question, though. So we said that Reagan was the last, that Trump is the first president since Reagan?
To not start a war.
To not,
you want
so,
to
yeah.
lift the war?
So, no. I was just curious because when was Reagan president?
89?
Okay, so before Reagan, well, there was a war during the Reagan presidency, wasn't there?
The Cold War.
No, there was the war on drugs, though. Would you not consider that?
I would consider that a war.
The war on drugs was definitely a war, and then you had the war on terrorism following that. I don't think
but
that
in terms of
did,
like a critical sense of a war.
Yeah, but did okay? Well, in that case, did Obama start a war?
I don't know.
You have to define the
No, I'm genuinely like, I'm not trying to say like what he's saying is wrong. I'm just genuinely curious because I can think of, we've only declared war. We've declared war multiple times for like brief periods in history. We had Great Britain, Mexico, Spain, Germany, Austria, Hungary, Japan, Germany again, that was for the Second World War, and then it kind of starts, it loops again. It goes Italy, Bulgaria, Hungary, Romania. But like since 1942, we technically haven't started a war. Go ahead. I just kind of got off on a tangent. I was just confused. Yeah. I'm not saying that Donald Trump, you know, has started a war or anything. I just wanted to check myself.
I think he has, Damian.
Do you think so?
And that war, yeah, I think he has. The first war was against the virus, which we've undercut it and failed at. We're really in the back here in the war. But the second more pressing war we have right now is between Americans. It's the civil war, I believe, we have between people on the left, on the right, people who are Black Lives Matter protesters in this fight, minorities versus police. This ideological war along race has been waged. Mm-hmm. You can't deny there's a big uprising going on right now. For example, we're talking about this not being a war, but the real fact of the matter is that today, this morning, we had a white man kill two people running up to him in a Black Lives Matter. And maybe it was a violent rally. I think it was. But he killed two people. And that's the fact of the matter. A war is when people are killed. And in this instance, American people are being killed by Americans. We have forgotten the value of an American life.
I have a question about that.
That is because of the ideological dissolve. Go ahead, Damian.
I was just curious. Sorry. Like, I just want to clarify that situation because I posted a TikTok at Damian Galvin _. You know, you can go check me out. Political TikToks too. I chew gum. But either way, I posted a TikTok and I from my interpretation of what the media was saying, and I'm speaking CNN, I'm not saying Fox News. This was a shooter at a Black Lives Matter protest. He was representing Black Lives. He was air quotes. If you watch my TikTok, you understand what I'm saying. He was air quotes representing Black Lives Matter. He didn't shoot two black people?
So what happened, Damien, was this guy wasn't a Black Lives Matter person. He was a militia man who was protecting businesses against Black Lives Matter protesters. Now, to provide our viewers,
I got to switch my shit up. Kind of then. Overview. Of my bad.
With a big overview of this, before we continue with this conversation, I think this is a valid route to take. We can talk about this for a couple of minutes here. But the whole instance is that we had these militia men posted outside of the facilities during this violent riot. It was really, that's what it was. It was a mob mentality violent riot. And these people were situated outside of businesses and kind of public facilities, protecting small businesses. And the police said, we you know, you have our full support. And what happened was this guy, the 17-year-old guy, he does have a history of being a Blue Lives Matter supporter and Trump supporter. He was running away from some protesters who were violently attacking him. And he tripped and he fell. And people were chasing him and he decided to shoot. He shot three people that day, one in the head, and he killed two of those people. The third one is in critical condition. He had a gun because he was putting up, I guess, some kind of ideological fight to protect small businesses, which I think we have the McCloskeys coming out in the first night of the RNC, which we can talk about now, promoting the use of guns against protesters to prevent your, you know, protesters from taking your stuff, rioters from you know, killing you or hurting your property. That's what the McCloskeys were saying, and now we've seen a deterioration of that. So he had a gun to protect small businesses.
Okay,
but
so
at the end of the day,
to correct my TikTok, which I'm gonna have to go do right now. I'm literally about to delete my TikTok. Not that my whole account, but like the TikTok that I just uploaded earlier. Because that was so. What I had said in the TikTok, and this still remains true. This still remains 1,000% true. Okay, so. In Wisconsin, I had thought that it was a Black Lives Matter protester shooting two white individuals, right? Which seemed a little bit odd to me because, you know, whatever you say about Black Lives Matter protesters, they don't usually carry firearms. I don't know. Will, maybe you want to correct me on that. I usually see pro-Trump rallies is...
Dude, I don't know.
I'm going to tell you one thing. The reason why Black Lives Matter don't carry guns
is because they get shot.
If a black man carried a gun down a street, what would happen?
Dude, if he carries a rock down a street, he gets shot. If he walks towards his car, he gets shot. If he has fentanyl in his system, apparently he was going to die either way, according to an attorney. But either way, that's beyond the point. So I thought that he was involved. So what I said in my TikTok was, and this is going to lead into a question, Will. What I said in my TikTok was the fact that, you know, Black Lives Matter should be represented by people unifying under one idea and shouldn't be represented by people committing acts of violence, including rioting and protesting. There needs to be a central leader. And I wish, in a sense, I could step up or someone I know could step up and really fill that leadership void. I mean, I'm looking for anyone to step up. I wouldn't know how to do it. I wouldn't know even where to begin. I'm sure there's people trying, but there needs to be a leadership void on that Black Lives there needs to be a leader elected kind of by the people on that Black Lives Matter movement. But my question to Will, so just to correct my statements on the TikTok, I still stand with what I said, but the shooter was against Black Lives Matter, not identifying with Black Lives Matter in any way. But my question to Will is, do you think that these there's a lot of things outshining the RNC right now? And I mean, it's evident in the conversation that we're having right now. These racial tensions are taking away from the attention that the RNC would otherwise be getting, including, you know, you can also talk about hurricanes. But do you think that these racial tensions happening during the RNC are getting to Trump's head or are going to affect the next two nights of the RNC moving forward?
Yes and no. I think it's going to affect there's a growing trend where, you know, like the McCloskeys, kind of like what we were talking about, I'm glad that you guys brought up the McCloskeys, because they were one of my least favorite speakers. Didn't really understand why they were there other than the fact of the message to not back down to the mob or whatnot. And I don't want to talk terribly long on it because I've got a couple other things we're going to. We might have to make this podcast a little bit longer. But I do want to say this. The cancel culture, and we were talking about this earlier with Nick Sandman, who was wearing a hat and got canceled for wearing a hat and smiling because he was a confused 17-year-old kid. Now, you take someone like that and you you cancel them and all that, and that's not going to make them think the way that you think.
Yeah.
And this is the issue, is that, and I know that, you know, Damien, you had just said you wish that someone would step up. Every Emily who posts, like, you know, little cutesy infographics on their story all think that they're that person, because they're all like, oh, I'm woke. But go woke, go broke. The NBA is doing it this year, and they have record low viewership. MLB, all down. You know what is up? Fox News. This is Fox News' best year. I don't even watch Fox News.
To defend that statistical front, Will, liberals tend to be younger and are moving to less traditional means of media. So if you look at representation on other forms of media, I think that you're always going to find liberal content being more popular. Beyond that, liberal content is also distributed more widely than conservative content. For example, I can think of ABC, MSNBC, and CNN, which are three different news outlets that all promote liberal content that I think Donald Trump would call fake news. Whereas I can think of one major news outlet that promotes conservative media, which is Fox News. And then on the front of the basket, I don't think that has anything to do with it.
I don't think
that it has anything to do with it at all. And to that point, I think, again, basketball is consumed by a younger liberal audience. And I think that, honestly, sports are just being consumed less now. And I can say that
I have a comment to make. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I used to watch basketball, and I'd watch baseball occasionally. I haven't seen a basketball game in like the past year.
If it is a younger liberal population, then how are they are you assuming that liberal or younger liberal population, like only younger people watch basketball, or like, because it's fine. I'm not going to comment specifically on that per se, but let me respond with kind of a half story. And I talked about you guys on our the episode we did, the Political Compass episode. I talked to you guys after that about how I'd wanted to do maybe an episode on like cancel culture and these, you know, these cutesy little infographics that are being spread around to try and bully people into changing their opinion. Now, let me tell you a little story, and I'll probably bring this up again should we ever do that podcast. But there's a girl who goes, or I shouldn't even say.
There's
a person that goes to my school. I've never met this person in real life. I've never had a conversation with this person in real life. And I don't know this girl. So, you know, one day I put something on my Instagram story as I had done, I've been doing a lot. It was around like the 4th of July or whatnot. So I was feeling a little extra American and a little extra political around then. And then she had responded to it. And I don't know this girl. But she doesn't know anything about me. And she never took the time to get to know me. And she never took the time to actually understand my thought process. I was berated, called, you know, uneducated, like, just called names and stuff. And I just wanted to know her reasoning. I never got the reasoning. I still don't know the reasoning today. So I think that that's the reason that we're going to see a rise of two different types of young Republicans. They're going to be the moderates, and there's going to be the alt-right. And we see both of them today. We just see them in different forms. Now, you know, your alt-right Republican might be like, I hate gay people, I hate black people, or whatever. They might be, I hate whatever, like KKK, you know, go back to where you came from type people, and that. You know, and then the moderates are going to be, you know, I feel like people like you and me who can see other sides of the opinion. Now, moderates, I'd say, have cooler heads. I'd like to consider myself someone with a cooler head. Now, some of the people I know get a comment like that from someone that they've never met. In 30 years, they're going to be saying, 20 or 30 years, they're not going to be saying, we don't like gay people, we don't like black people. They're going to be, we don't like Democrats. Like, we just, and that's going to lead to a lack of change. And that's not what we need in this country right now.
Well, we can't. They already are. Yeah.
With change. Because right now, it's less. Right now, it is less anti, we're edging towards this less anti-gay, anti-black, anti, you know, immigrant or whatever from like radical Republicans. Like, I don't see on Instagram, I don't see like Charlie Kirk roasts like Asian student or something like that. You don't see that crap. You see Candace Owens destroys liberal student.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's suddenly become a battle of skin color, which is good that it's not. But we have a conflict, and it's an unnecessary conflict. And I feel like people on the left and some on the right, I don't see it as much on the right, but I see it I see it a hell of a lot on the left. The bullying. It's bullying. And, you know, we can say what we will about our president. He's definitely a bully.
I want to mention one thing, yeah.
But you will never get someone to think the way that you think by telling them your opinion is wrong. Your opinion is wrong and you need to change it right now.
I feel
that will never happen.
Go ahead, Varun. 1,000%.
So my comments on this is that I think that you don't see some things because you don't choose to see them. And that's not in any way diminutive. Because I think that sometimes a lot of these issues are masked by what certain media sources say. So I think going back to Nick Sandman, there's a lot of things wrong with that situation. You know, media outlets bashed a 17-year-old kid. Yeah, I get it. But the issue is that the week before that happened, the Charlottesville riots happened, and Donald Trump stood up there and said there are good people on both sides, as in KKK members and as in Black Lives Matter protesters. That's what inspired that incident. I'm not saying what happened was right in that incident. The fact of the matter is that the division happened because our president was being blatantly, I believe, blatantly racist. And that's why I say that I think that sometimes you choose not to see some things because that's exactly why it happened. And yes, to your point, I think me and Damien are considered more open-minded people. So I've seen liberals myself. Being a moderate, I've seen liberals back when I supported Biden. I still do. I've been a Biden supporter since the 2020 elections, the very beginning. And I saw some Bernie supporters, and they burned at me as well. And they were like, why are you supporting Biden? He's misogynistic. He's a sexual harasser. And they had no points to support their claims. Now, I think what you're saying is that they had no points, and they were becoming defensive when you said things like that.
Whoa.
And a person becoming defensive, person berating you, it means you're winning, Will. It means you're winning.
Yeah.
Because if a person doesn't have concrete points to defend their statements, they're not in the right there. And I think that the more you do kind of push upon that, you understand more about yourself and why you're right. But again, back to my initial point before you continue, Damien.
Go ahead.
Media sources have been basically obliterating content on the left and right out of proportion. And that's why sometimes you don't see the things that happen behind the scenes. Of course, Matt Gaetz, of course, these people like Charlie Kirk aren't going to come out and say, I hate gays, I hate black people. But sometimes behind the scenes, that's exactly what happens. Sometimes behind the scenes in political strategy on Democratic side and Republican side, that's exactly what happens. So whereas you're not going to see it happen out front, it may happen behind the scenes. And with Trump, it's happening explicitly. And that's exactly why people like Nick Sandman are being berated for what they believe in. It's because the president is promoting rhetoric like the Charlottesville incident, which is exactly correlated with that Nick Sandman incident.
If you want to talk about the left bullying, though, we have to talk about the right bullying. We have to talk about the fact that the vice president was just awoken to another birther movement after the president of the United States of America was subject to a birther movement in his presidency by the president of the United States. And this is, again, by the right-wing media. We have to talk about the fact that after George Floyd died, they said that he in a sense, deserved to die because of the fact that he had fentanyl in his system and that he wasn't a good person either way. This is the right-wing media. We have to bring up the fact that today the right-wing media brought up the fact that Jacob Blake had an arrest warrant for sexual misconduct on a 15-year-old girl, instead of saying, you know, sending their condolences and acknowledging the fact that he was shot in front of his 3-year-old or in front of his 3 kids, right? This is the right wing media. We have to also bring attention to the fact that it was the right wing media that pushed the ideas of a 14-year-old boy and a 16-year-old boy, and, you know, 2 other boys in between those ages being hung when Donald Trump again pushed that idea again. This is the right-wing media. We can't just say, and I'm not saying that the left-wing media doesn't do it either, because Lord knows that they do, but we can't say you guys are doing this and then kind of sweep under the rug. We both have to acknowledge that both sides of, you know, as a centrist, I can say both sides are doing something completely wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that this isn't how you come to terms with anything. But I was really getting worked up about, I get worked up about one thing in politics. And it's when someone dies, or someone gets shot. I don't care if you're black, if you're white. I don't care if you did not have a trial and a jury of your peers to assume your guilt, or to assume someone is guilty, is un-American and it's unpatriotic, and it goes against every single one of our values, and it goes against the exact foundation of this country, which is the idea of being represented properly. Okay, so when a black man gets shot and is paralyzed from the waist down in front of his 3 children, and your defense is he had an arrest warrant for sexual misconduct, you're childish and beyond childish. It's disgusting. It frankly is. And when your defense is the reason that George Floyd died was because he had fentanyl in his system and not, we're sorry that George Floyd died, you know, our police misconduct was horrible and we could have definitely attributed to him dying, then you're the problem, right? And it's really working me up because I'm seeing people, and I don't get worked up about something, but I mean, this is a human life. And more importantly, these are 3 humans, right? These are 3 humans who are going to grow up. In his kids, I'm speaking of. These are 3 humans that are going to grow up, right, with the idea that police, with the idea of the ACAB movement. And who's to say that to them, that's a wrong movement? Who's to say to 3 kids, they didn't commit the sexual misconduct, they didn't have arrest warrants, they still saw their dad shot right in front of them? What's the argument there, right? What's the argument there? So you're going to tell them, oh no, all cops are not bastards, right? And they're going to tell you that they saw their dad paralyzed and has to be in a wheelchair for the rest of his life, and the president can't even send out his condolences. No, rather, he says that the National Guard should be sent out. And then the next morning, I don't know, maybe a 17-year-old boy shoots 3 people, right? That's how you calm down a situation. I think that really, again, it's not about a left or a right. It's about a wrong and a right. And I'm not saying that the left is always right or that the right is always wrong. But what I'm saying is that it has gotten to a point where we need to stop trying to play political games. Masks aren't politics, and Black Lives Matter isn't a political statement. It's a moral statement, it's a human statement, and it's something that we all need to live by. I don't care if this man had an arrest warrant for murder. If he wasn't found guilty, we shouldn't assume anything, right? The fact of the matter is that he was shot 7 times by police. And I get sick of it. I get sick of it. I really do. Again, there's not many things that work me up, but when you have these arguments being made that he deserved to get shot, right? I wouldn't wish that upon a murderer. I mean, these are the same people that saying that the death penalty should be abolished. But I'd give, you know, free just the rest of the podcast. We can close it out with whatever Will has to say on my comments. I know I got a little worked up there, and I think that it's only fair that he gets to respond.
Absolutely.
I don't know. How are we doing on time?
We're good. We're good. Just, you know, I'm going to give you the closing statements. Go for it, man.
Well, closing, I did want to talk about a couple other people.
Yeah, we can talk about them on Friday.
We can even talk about them on Friday, Will. And this was very off-putting. Like Damien said, a lot of things have happened that have overshadowed the RNC. So I think that we've had a lot of different discourse today, but we can continue that on Friday.
Okay. All right. Good. Because I wanted to talk about. I think Friday episode we can. I only really want to talk about like 3 people. I want to talk about Nikki Haley. I want to talk about Vernon Jones.
Yeah, I want to talk about Melania Trump. You know, there's a lot. There's a lot. But I'm sorry.
Nobody's expected this.
I saw a tweet and I was like, I have to say something. Like, it's infuriating. And I think, Will, even as a conservative, you can understand that it's infuriating that the president hasn't made a statement, right?
Right. I think and I know as we close it out, I would like to say that there's this narrative going around from, you know, popular pop culture, like with the infographics or whatnot. And I've seen some that are like, even if they were guilty, they don't deserve to be shot. Well,
that's an argument to be had.
Hell no. Hell no, they don't get to, like, they don't deserve to get shot. Mm-hmm. Like, no one deserves to get shot unless they were threatening the life of a police officer. Now, I don't think that, and here's why I waited so long to comment on the Breonna Taylor situation. And I waited so long because we didn't have the facts. We didn't have the facts. I'd argue that even though the arrest warrant was released, and or not the arrest warrant, but the search warrant was released, and even though her name was on it, I still don't think we have all the facts. We still don't. So I can't make a proper judgment. So I like to assume, and you know, some people, the Believe All Women group with Me Too, they like to get mad at people.
That's not right either.
But are you saying that?
The Believe All Women movement isn't right. No, you shouldn't believe. No. You shouldn't believe all anyone. You should always listen to facts.
You're innocent until proven guilty.
Exactly, and that's what we need to apply.
That's, you know, that's a foundation that this country is built on. This country was built on fairness. Like, you, if you cannot afford a lawyer, one will literally be provided to you by the state. Like, people need to realize that. I think here's the issue with the Fox, with like not just Fox News, but just media in general. The media is quick to blame the aggressors, and like some, like, left media is quick to blame the aggressors and right media is quick to blame the aggressee. It doesn't matter who started it. It doesn't matter if, in the sense of Rayshard Brooks, the man who was killed in Atlanta, which I don't know your guys' thoughts about that, but if you watch the entire body cam footage shows that, and you look at his history too. No, he didn't deserve to get shot. But at the same time, when you steal a cop's taser, like, you are asking for it. That, and that sucks. That's super. That, like, that really sucks that he died. But you know what also sucks? And I'll say this, like,
I don't think anyone can ask for it. I don't think that an intoxicated man running away from police with a taser can ask for it. I think that, you know, with all defense, I think that the police immunity argument is kind of weird. Like, if someone that's not wearing a badge and a uniform points a gun at you and you have a gun, you're going to shoot them. So I don't see.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah, I want to, like, let Will continue, though.
Go ahead. Go. Sorry.
There's an issue with that and the whole Rayshard Brooks case, which I haven't, you know, I don't think we've, you guys might have talked about it. I didn't. But he got out of jail because of COVID-19, and he got out of jail because he was in jail for beating his kids. The excuse that he used for the cops for him being in his car drunk was, oh, I'm just going over to my baby mama house to see my kids. That's like literally what he said. The kids that he beat, like, he was convicted. So he had a fair trial. And then he goes out and he's intoxicated and the police watch the body cam footage. The police are like, yeah, we're just trying to make sure you get home okay. It sucks he died. But it also sucks that, you know, the media is trying to blame the police officers when in Georgia, a taser is considered deadly force or a deadly weapon. And even though in some cases it can kill you, it is, you know, preferred by cops. And I think it's, you know, the cop had the taser out before he had the gun. And I think it's really unfortunate that he died. I think it's unfortunate how he died. And I really hope that he was trying to become a better person for his kids. And that, you know, it really makes me sad in the sense that he won't be able to be there for his kids and his kids won't have a father like that, but you can't always jump to conclusions. And that's my final message to any media. And I would say this is a media too. And I think you guys have done an excellent job at not jumping to conclusions. But you,
and we all media, do.
Yeah.
You as a media cannot, and I say you, I mean, just as a media outlet, you can't jump to conclusions until you have all the facts, because you could ruin someone's life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could ruin their life. Just like the football player, and I think he was a football player. It was a woman who falsely accused a man of rape, and he killed himself. He killed himself. Like, because, and I saw, and it wasn't a huge story until he killed himself, but local media was like, woman, like man accused of, local high schooler accused of rape. And then 2 weeks later, local high, and on like national news, at least for one day, it was on national news, I think, like high schooler, whatever his name was, kills himself after being falsely accused of rape. Like that, even at a local media, like how many people read the news, but like the online news in our county? How many people do that?
Mm-hmm.
Like the amount of exposure that you have as a news outlet, it can really impact, you know, anyone's life. So I think as a final message, and I kind of went off on my own tangent there, is that especially now in this day and age, words and how you phrase them matter a hell of a lot more than they did 20 years ago, 50 years ago. I mean, just look at, you know, I remember my dad telling me about how when he was in high school, he said things that could get you expelled now, or him and his friends or whatever said things that, or he heard things or things that were said back then. Like nowadays, or like back then, you could say the R word and people, you get away with it. Now you say it now, you're able, like you get labeled an ableist, yeah, even though you may not even know what it's meaning. Back then, people said the FAG word. Like you, nowadays, people are a lot more sensitive and there's a lot more restrictions.
I don't that, you know. Yeah, I mean,
let me make this clear. I don't think that you should go around saying that. I don't think you should go around saying those words. I hate those words.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We don't. Absolutely.
But I think that everyone, including media, needs to watch what they say. And I think that's all I got today.
Yeah.
And that's amazing. I mean, obviously, a lot of conversation being had today. A lot of discourse being had today. A couple of points that I wanted to end on. As you said, I think accountability needs to be given towards the facts. And once we have the full facts, we can make a decision. Now, in the case of Breonna Taylor, my opinion is that the reason why we didn't have enough facts was because the police officers involved in that instance didn't have body cams, even though body cams were mandated by that department for all officers to wear. They had the availability. They had the choice. They had the mandate. And they didn't wear body cams. I think that if they did, it would have been a much easier case to decide upon. And just by them not wearing body cams, that makes them guilty, in my opinion. It's very coincidental that the people without the body cams killed a woman inside of her own home. And that coincidentality, the fact that they didn't have body cams on, it makes them guilty, in my opinion. And the last point I wanted to make was that it was spurring in my mind for a while, Damien. Ever since you said that the ACAB movement is going to be ingrained within the minds, I believe, of the kids of Jacob Blake.
Mm.
Now, I think that as much as, for example, a lot of Americans, the dads are incarcerated. They're put in jail for drug crimes. The war on drugs has made this so. And those people's wives, their kids, are forever going to be hold up in this idea that police are bad. The police took away my father. The police took away my husband. The police took away my source of a good future. Now, the idea is that as much as Trump's presidency was created by divisiveness, I think that the ACAB movement was created by divisiveness. And the only way that we can dispel both of these things and move forward towards a better future is to destroy the divisiveness that enables both things to happen.
Yeah.
And I think that is the real reality here. And that's what I'm going to end on today. Last of all, thank you so much for Will for joining us today. As always, it was an amazing conversation. Your third podcast with Politine. More to come. Plenty more to come. And it was an amazing discourse, an amazing conversation. A lot of emotions being pushed forth today. But that said, thank you all for listening to our podcast. Make sure to visit www.polititeenpodcast.com for more amazing content from our sponsors. A quick shout out to our team. Julia Hartman's an amazing research head for our team. And Jada Pilling and Yi Shen had our graphics team over at Polititeen. So a quick shout out to them. And that said, thank you to my amazing co-host, Damien Galvin, my wonderful co-host, Damien Galvin, and Will Carroll here today, our conservative correspondent, for an amazing conversation, as always.
Yeah. Peace and out, there you go. Peace out, guys. Thank you, guys. Be sure to tune in this Friday for the part two of this RNC episode. We'll try to focus a little bit more on the RNC. A lot of emotion being said today. But, you know, you got to have a conversation about what's on your mind. And that's kind of what we invite all of us to do. But with that being said, I don't want to go over time. So once again, peace out. Be sure to tune into the episode. Yeah. Be sure to tune into the episode this Friday. And as always, thank you for watching.
Hello, 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 everybody. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Polititeen Podcast. If you enjoyed our conversation, head on over to www.patreon.com/polititeenpodcast for more exclusive members-only content, special episodes, and merch drops. That is, once again, www.patreon.com/polititeenpodcast. I'm going to make it a jingle when I grow up. It is www.patreon.com/polititeenpodcast. No, I'm just kidding, you guys. But definitely visit www.polititeenpodcast.com. For more amazing content from myself, Damien, our team, our amazing artwork head, and our sponsors over at Polititeen. And once again, thank you so much for watching today's episode. Thank you to my co-host, Damien Galvin, for an amazing conversation, my friend. I do appreciate your input, as always. And that said, have a great rest of your weekend. Chime in for the next episode, and we hope you enjoyed today's conversation.